Let's begin this evening's meetings of the Finance and Facilities Committee of Glen Allen School District 41, November 28th, 2011. It's a little after 6:07 p.m. here at the Central Services offices. The first order of business is the review and approval of minutes from the November 14th meeting. Would you please take a moment to review those minutes and let me know if they meet with your approval.
I'm good with the minutes.
Okay. All right. Steve, are you good with the minutes?
Yeah, they're fine.
Okay. The second order of business this evening then is a review of administrative procedure 4.2, fiscal philosophy AP. Anne, I'll let you lead that discussion then.
Okay. The adjusted procedure that you have in front of you reflects, hopefully the discussion that we had at our last board meeting. I removed all of the specifics in number three because I think as we had the conversation, we couldn't quite agree whether either have a full laundry list or maybe just don't have any that seem to tell us where we're going. And I did the same at the end where if the fund balance exceeds, we had 33%, there were lots of specifics there and I removed those. The original document had 33% of operating expenses. The board, in your discussion, indicated that you'd like to see a range, and so this is the range we're recommending. I presume that will be a source of discussion, along with all of the other changes that we are suggesting. So that's basically, in its simplest form, we just adjusted language according to the board discussion and are recommending a range of 25 to 30%.
And I think from a context standpoint, the intent of this AP, as I understand it, is to really kind of open a dialogue if these ranges are exceeded or
diminished,
plus or minus.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the intent is a really good thing, and I think it's something we've had this ongoing discussion for the last at least 2 years, and I think it makes sense to put this in place. I think the questions really is, are we comfortable with the numbers, mm-hmm. the range numbers? But I think putting this AP in place does make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess that goes back to the question we were kind of talking about was, should it be a policy instead of an AP?
I think they're two very different things, though, because in terms of this AP, this is a procedure for staff to go to the board and say we're plus or minus outside of the range. A board policy, I think, is a different thing, and if we want to do a board policy, I can get comfortable with that concept and making a recommendation to policy committee and say, research and draft some verbiage in terms of a policy. But I think they're kind of two very different things.
I think that's what we've already kind of started, though, because our discussion went to, except for, I swear, Section 2, APs are typically developed by the administration. So if the board wants to set some guidelines, then I guess going on that philosophy, it should really be a policy versus an AP.
That's not necessarily, I don't know that that's necessarily true. Administrative procedures can be directed by the board to be developed, and often are the case, particularly in Section 4. And let me give you an example of, you know, we have a very elaborate AP around, well, our architects, that architectural piece of the professional services. You know, we have a less specific policy around the use of professional services that can apply in multiple settings. But then we have a very specific AP that we followed IASB for the most part, because they give us samples of those APs that we might want to use. But we really took the direction of this group, finance, in shaping those APs. I think rather than say the administrative procedures are at the sole discretion of the administration, would make a distinction that just isn't true. They're still board procedures intended to be carried out by the administration. And that fall, they're kind of the steps that fall within the range of the board policy. So the board policy is about budget development, and it's that broad, you know.
Yeah, I'm okay with that explanation. It just seemed like when Erica was talking through it, she was implying that something different. And so that's where I was trying to clear it up and see if we'll, you know, she kind of made it sound like, from what I heard, that was more you guys developed the policy, the AP, and we just did the policy.
I think what the difference for me between policy and AP is policy is the kind of the overview, the general direction, what it is that governs our work. The AP is the work. What will you do when? And so it changes. It can change more readily than a policy may change. But it's still, it's not at our sole discretion to say, okay, this is what we're going to do. We have, in curriculum, we have an AP that's very lengthy around what will be taught. You know, what are all the things you have to teach? I think you were part of that revision. Well, if that had been at our sole discretion, that AP would look very different. But there's school code that tells us what we have to do. If you put that into policy, you know, you'd have a huge policy. So I think AP is just what must be done in greater detail. It's more, a little bit more action oriented than the policy is.
Steve?
I don't want a policy. I just want an AP.
Okay.
Are you comfortable with the AP as it's presented here? Hi, Sam.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, I think you just need a plan at over 30%. I don't think there has to be anything that says that specific actions need to be taken. Again, we're elected every year to look at specific circumstances for this year and what needs to be done. We're not here to create, you know, actions for future boards.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, well, as you said, there's going to be some more discussion around the actual percentage payment or at the full board, or I mean, I gave some ideas at the last meeting, but I haven't heard anyone else say any numbers, so I didn't know if you want to do that now or wait.
I think
full board discussion.
No, I think this group was charged with kind of making that recommendation to policy.
Or wouldn't it go back to the board? Or we go back to the policy?
And I'd have to go back and look at the minutes. I thought it was sort of the way we did.
I thought it was going back to the full board.
Which is fine. I think it's fine either way.
Okay.
But I think that board was looking to this group to send something definitive. So our recommendation is 25 to 30. Yours was 20 to 25.
So if we could just... If we can table the percentages just for the moment, do we have an agreement that the verbiage is acceptable, and so it's really the only variable that we need to talk about is the range.
Mm-hmm. Yes. If that's, I mean, are we comfortable with the language?
Steve?
Yes.
Okay. Okay.
Okay.
Dan, the and your number is 20 to 25,
right?
And that's driven. And I think I found where you saw that. That's from.
Well, part of that was from looking at the percentage of revenues that are not property tax based, and looking at if we had to spend down the fund balance to cover those. How much time that would give us. The other thing too is looking at the equation. You know, the other effect it can have is on your financial rating given by the state. You know, there's a number, I think there's like 3 or 4 or 5 different factors in there. Fund balance is one portion of it. And so when I look at all those, I thought that we could still get 20 to 25% of it. Still good.
You know, I could get comfortable with the 25 to 20. I'm kind of it really doesn't. I don't know that it makes that much difference one way or the other. I could get comfortable with something in the middle between the 30 and the 25. So. I think it's just more important that we put this AP in place.
We kept 25% as the bottom for that reason of the state rating, and you indicated I think in your justification that 25% was still acceptable by the state. We'd rather see that as the low end of the fund balance percentage that rather than the high end of the percentage. We just think it's a better stability factor long term. But it's your, I mean, that's our rationale.
Yeah.
It's your IP.
And when you were discussing the financial rating by the state, that's a 5-part formula. The two highest calculated, the two highest used formulas, they account for 60% of that calculation, where the other three calculations account for about 40% of that. The two highest are the fund balance calculation that you referenced earlier, and also that calculation of revenues from expenditures, ensuring that you maintain a consistent surplus. Not necessarily how great or small that surplus is, but rather just so that you have a surplus defined over a number of years.
It was the final factor that got us the rating, was the fund balance moving up, and it also was the final factor that when we received the Red Apple recognition was having a fund balance that put us in comparison to other highly rated districts. So we think it's an important piece of the financial picture of the district, in the health of the district. And you know, would encourage you to maintain it. Unless there are, I mean, I guess I'd want to know a little more deeply the reasons for not maintaining it at the minimum of 25%.
Well, some of the thing, and I think even from the letterbox, we'll actually have some of the parallel comments. Even if you didn't have the 25%. If you didn't have the perfect score, there was still a range of score you could still have that would still get you the bond ratings, mm-hmm. that would still be accepted.
And so I guess it's a matter of standards. Do we, you know, we talk about high standards in the district, and I feel a little bit of a kind of a maybe a discontinuity about we want to have high academic standards, but we're okay with not having as high financial standards.
In other words, we just barely meet that threshold of excellence.
Yeah. Is that the standard we're striving to achieve? I guess that would be an important piece of this to weigh in on.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's still, even with, you know, below 20s, I think it's still, you're still able to achieve that standard. I just think that, you know, maybe as Drew said, there's some middle ground. I just think that the 30 is, I guess, more than a cushion. So then I try to think, well, then what would be a more
Maybe you just put it at 25.
Right, but I don't want that range, so you don't have to. Well, it doesn't have to make everything perfect.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to. We're still going to have to do it every year, and because we don't set a specific number, we'll be making multiple calculations because we're establishing a range of minimum and maximum versus just a certain percentage. So that work is going to have to be done here, regardless of whether there's a set percentage or a range.
Sam, you have thoughts?
I do. But in this minimum window of the percentage, I've come from the 25 to 30. I'm more concerned about the state rating and to preserve the highest value there than any other factor in that particular percentage. So in that point, I'm comfortable with the 25 to 30. And I would also leave a range, you know, because we want to be able to be within a window to not have to come up with a plan every year to do something if we're not exactly at the number we're supposed to be at. I think it's probably best to leave that range as it is.
Which is the
25 to 30, 20 to 25, whatever the range may be, but I'm comfortable with 25 to 30. And I can't wait. I hear what we're all really focusing on, but that's my own opinion without having heard anything else.
We're really just talking about the AP, and the consensus that we have is the AP as it stands is okay with the tweaking of the specifics of the delta range. So
everything else is fine with it except for that particular number,
yeah,
and or range. So that's what we're
that's kind of what we're talking about now. Steve?
I'm fine with the numbers and the recommendation.
Okay.
That's all I have to say. Thanks.
Okay. And I guess I can get comfortable. I can get comfortable with that as well. You know, the next question is going to be if we apply this today, where are we? And that's going to be the next.
Mm-hmm.
The next discussion, and that's something we're probably is that something we're talking at later at the full board meeting, or is that something that we want to talk about at finance?
We don't have it as a specific discussion on the board agenda as it relates to the levy. You may have some thoughts about that, but we don't have it identified as, you know, following through with this, what do you do then? So we would have to have this approved before we would come back formally to the board and say, here's where we are. You know, that's one of the advantages of maybe going with a fixed percent, because even at the lower end, if you were saying 25 to 30, you know, 25, anytime you hit that 25% mark, then it's kind of a trigger in a way. Because if board members could say, well, we're at 27%. I'd like to talk about that 2%. You know, whether or not we should do something. See what I'm saying? That there really is a trigger once you hit 25% in some ways, because you're at the bottom of the range.
Okay.
Once you hit that minimum threshold, you'll trigger that calculation.
Well, yeah, and you're going to trigger a conversation of some sort. Okay, we're now at 27%. Do you want to keep growing, or do you want to do something at this point? So I think even if you set a threshold percentage of 25%, you could say anything above 25% is, you know, board conversation about whether to continue to grow the fund balance or do something with that.
And then I guess that would tie back to the last bullet point where it said if the fund balance exceeds instead of 30, 25 of the operating funds,
the plan for the excess funds will be made on plan for the excess funds would be made based on a board approval recommendation.
Right, which could be to keep growing them.
Right.
You know?
But it triggers a board discussion and you know, and I'm assuming that's full board or is that finance committee?
I think that would be up to the full board to determine.
Okay, but from just reading the AP, I just want it to be, I'd like to have it clear that.
So,
I'm going to just look at the last bullet.
Fund balance exceeds 30%
of operating. So if we change that to 25 and we say, and we just, you plug in a hard number, anytime it exceeds 25%.
We presented a plan to the board as to how to utilize those excess resources.
I would just say a plan will be made based on board approval of recommendations from the superintendent and the finance committee, and because you may decide to continue to grow the reserves based on something you're trying to achieve,
depending on the economic
conditions. It rather than refer to it as excess reserves, just refer to it, just say a plan will be made based on.
Okay.
Because you could say, well, you know, we really want to carry this up so we can, you know, things we've talked about in the past, whether it's setting aside a capital fund for certain things that you know are going to cost more money or so.
I kind of like your idea of the 25% is a hard number. I mean, that actually makes sense, and then it ties back to the state standard.
Well, and it seems to get at, you know, Dan's belief that 25 is kind of that threshold number in order to maintain your financial rating and doesn't warrant automatically that there's an ability to take it up to 30%.
We think that. So you're saying one instead of getting rid of the range?
Just make it a hard 25, and then the last bullet, make it 25 instead of 30.
And that first bullet under would be not the range. The budget plan will be implemented annually. Increase the fund balance to reach 25%.
Well, I guess that's what I don't quite understand. You're saying to reach 25, but then Bob Drew, I heard you say if it's over 25, something else happens.
Well, then that triggers a board discussion. That's the very last bullet point.
So the very last bullet point, if the fund balance exceeds 25% of operating funds, a plan will be made based on board approval of recommendations from the superintendent and finance committee.
I'm comfortable with that. That makes sense. Bob, your thoughts? I mean, does that make a difference to you one way or the other?
Since, however, the board of finance committee directs me to provide the services in my office.
Does it cause more work for you for your staff? Is it less work? Is it work neutral?
No, well, anytime you're going to become specific with regards to an administrative procedure, it's going to trigger additional work. But, I mean, that's policy or procedure, and we do so accordingly. We manage our schedules accordingly.
Okay.
It's a blackout.
Yeah, I guess I'm just a little fuzzy, so I have to see the language to understand. So that I'm clear on what we're talking about.
So procedurally, are we formalizing, is the finance committee formalizing the AP, or is it just sending recommendations to policy and then policy formalizes it, and then it goes to the full board?
Yeah, what was your recollection? That was my recollection.
I think that was my understanding, but I just want to be clear as to what is actually going
to
be.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I thought it was going to back to finance, and then it was going back to the board.
To the board.
Because I thought policy had already weighed in on it.
No, policy's never seen it.
No.
Well, it's the next section that policy. If section 4 is the next section for policy committee to deal with.
I thought
you guys wrote
this policy. No, I wrote it. Yeah, Eric and I had a couple comments, but
we gave it to policy first to look at the comments. Then it came to you. Then it went to the full board. Then the full board had a conversation and. Looks like we're split in terms of our memory about what was going to happen next.
Okay.
Really, it's six of one, half dozen of another. I think if we could settle on the language now and either take it back to the full board or... But I'm a little fearful that we take it back now, another board meeting, back to finance for the language. I mean, I could ask Maureen to fix the language right now if you wanted to take a look at that.
Yeah,
that's great. Do we ask her to step in here? Let me read it to you, okay? So when you get down to the bottom of page 3, it says if fund balances are reduced below 25% of operating expenses, bullet 1 would read, a budget plan will be implemented to annually increase the fund balance to reach 25% of operating expenditures. Okay, so that would be a change. And then if you go to page 4, the final statement, if the fund balance exceeds 25% of operating funds, and the next bullet would read, a plan will be made based on board approval of recommendations from the superintendent and the finance committee. So those are, other than the other changes that are made in the top part, we would take out anything that references range and just put 25%.
Okay. So you say you target to at least reach the 25.
Mm-hmm.
If it goes over, then a plan comes out of the recommendations from superintendent.
Mm-hmm.
A plan, does it have to be more specific than just a plan?
Well, I don't think so. I mean, because here it says a plan for excess reserves will be made based on... I mean, you could leave that in there, or you could just say a plan, because we originally, if we were in that range, and we did say 25 to 30 was acceptable to most board members, then you're not necessarily defining that above 25% as excess. I guess that's why I would take that language out. Maureen, can I dictate to the policy change to you?
Sure.
Thanks. Thank you for coming in. Okay, that's fine. So, Dan, go up to number 5, too, because we'd have to change that.
Yeah, I did pull up the policy. Yeah, but
so it would read everything, you know, past working operations, maintenance, and transportation shall be maintained at 25%. Of operating expenses, and that would be the only change. So that would, the range would come out of there.
Okay, we're speaking for the moment.
Steve, are you comfortable with these changes?
Yeah, it's fine.
Now let's put the headset back up.
Open the lead only. It's open there. It says it's locked by me. Yeah, okay. I just want you to know that. Okay. All right. What's the first change?
Okay, first change is number 5, where it states between a range of 25 to 30%. We'll just make that.
Is that the first paragraph?
That's the second, it's the first sentence of number 5. Mm-hmm.
The unreserved balance shall be maintained
at 25%. You know what? I have a paper copy of it. What if I just write on the paper copy?
Okay.
Maureen, you got it?
Yeah.
Okay.
25% instead of 33%.
Instead of the range that says 25 to 30? Or does yours only have 33?
Mine only has 33%.
Okay, you may not have the most recent.
The one I'm looking for.
You may not. You probably don't have the most recent version.
I have
one too. Who created the most recent?
Nancy. But I think she created it in. Gotta have a paper backup.
Okay, is that the only change that you know of?
No, the change. I made changes while you were gone, taking out all this redlined version, this verbiage up here. So there's a whole bunch of new red line on this.
All right, let me just find out
where it's at. Okay. Well, should we just hold on this for a moment while we try and get this?
Well, I think you can talk through it.
So you're comfortable?
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're, as the Finance Committee, we're agreed to forward this back to either policy or the board.
I think, yeah, it sounds that way. And maybe, Drew, what you could do when we get to board report,
okay,
just get a clarification on that, where it's supposed to go next.
Okay, that's fine. Absolutely. Steve, you're good with that?
He is. He said he was.
Okay.
Yeah, I said I was good with it.
Okay.
I did find a minor typo, but...
Oh, great. Tell us.
I can do that later.
Okay, so that'll finish our conversation this evening about Administrative Procedure 4.2. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then we'll move on to the next order of business, which is the 2011 Comprehensive Annual Financial Report, Distribution, and Revenue and Expenditure Reconciliation. Just like to provide a little background and information. And some conversation.
Thank you, Maureen.
Okay, so we're ready to move on then? Okay, the next order of business then this evening will be to present the actual budget for 2010-11 and then the year-end on a fully approved basis for the fiscal year 2010-2011 and the differences that occurred between the identified revenues and expenditure areas. Just to back up a bit, annually, this is about the time of year when we receive these comprehensive annual financial reports as well as the audited financial reports from our auditors. I would like you to know that I have set them up to come to our first finance committee in January to present the CAFR to the finance committee. And at that time, I'm sure they'll be willing to or capable willing to delve into any additional questions that you may have. So I was asked to provide a little reconciliation here in terms of the differences between what I budgeted for, what the finance office budgeted for, and what we actually set up. So on the far left-hand corner, far left-hand column, we have various revenue and expenditure items. We have property tax, other local revenue, general state aid, other state aid, which are the categoricals, federal aid, total revenue, and then less the expenditures of salaries, benefits, purchase services, supplies and materials, capital outlay, other expenditures, total expenditures, and then the year, what would be the surplus or deficit. On a cash basis, which is the way we budget, we anticipated receiving about $39,387,000 of property taxes. The budget, the actual amount, that was the budget amount. The amount that actually came in was $39,301,000, or we were off approximately $85,500 between what we anticipated giving, what we budgeted, and what we actually received. The next order of business would be the other revenue, other local revenue. The other local revenue includes the CPPRT, corporate personal property replacement taxes, the investment income, student fees, and a variety of other income items. The difference between what we budgeted and what we actually received was actually $98,900 less than what we had anticipated. General state aid, we budgeted $1,013,000. It came in at $1,323,000. That represented a $308,800 difference. Now, I wanted to talk a little bit about state revenue. We, throughout the year, receive numerous forms of correspondence and attend several meetings with representatives, the financial gurus, if you will, from the Illinois State Board of Education. On numerous occasions, we were told, do not expect to receive more than 30% of your previous year's anticipated revenues. So that's what we budgeted. If you were to get a better handle on how these numbers are made up individually that flow into the total, you can reference pages 41 on, which includes just the general fund. They go on for several pages, the general fund, O&M, transportation. They'll provide an item-by-item analysis in terms of what we budgeted and what we actually received. So my form here just summarizes those findings. So the reason we took out $300,000 in general state aid is because we were instructed that we were should only anticipate 70% of the previous year's expenditures. Same thing with the other state aid. We typically had $2.7 million in other state aid, maybe $2.9 million, and we took 30% out of there. So our budgeted number was $1,907,000 when we actually received $2,630,000. Now, to provide a little explanation regarding that, you know, those two numbers make up $1,031,000. That's about 30% of a $3 million state revenue source that we have had previously. Upon analysis, we actually, for the fiscal year 2011, during the months of, and the state has been quite well at being late, and significantly late, on its source upon its payments, okay? Those payments that we receive from, let's say, July 1st through June 30th, that's an entire fiscal year. But items that are vouchered for and that we received during the months of July and August, we recognize on a cash basis on the following fiscal year. Where on an accrued basis, the auditors will come in and make a year-end accrual recognizing that revenue in this particular fiscal year or 10-11 fiscal year. And we were doing some research, Phyllis and I, and we discovered during the months of July and August of 2010, we received $674,000 from the state that actually came into the 2010-11 year-end accrued basis financial statements. Now, that you also need to take into account that same type of occurrence happened again this year. We received payments in July and August of this year that were accrued into the year-end balance of fiscal year 2011. And then we have received additional funds during the period September, October, and November that will be included in this year's or 2012 financial statements. So it gets a little confusing in terms of being able to try to track state revenues. So there was a report, there was a little additional language that I included in the month-end summaries, the narrative that I provide the board with the month-end summary of expended revenues and expenditures. I'm going to try to provide the board with a little greater detail each month in terms of where we stand in terms of revenues that have been received thus far and which fiscal year we anticipate them being accrued into. To give you an example, we received, and I don't mean to go from the CAPA report to the present financial statements, but I just wanted to give you a little bit of explanation. We've received $1,263,000 in other state revenues so far this year. All of that is for the fiscal year 2011, ended June 30th, 2011. So on a cash basis, we're showing, boy, we've received a lot of state revenue. On an accrued basis, we haven't received anything for this fiscal year yet. So that's what makes it difficult to determine exactly how we budget, because we get conflicting comments from the Illinois State Board of Education. And then the legislature turns around and funds us at a full, our full anticipated levels, our full funding, versus some percentage that we were told to reduce our anticipated revenues by. So I just wanted to provide a little clarity or a little explanation on that.
Bob, can I ask you a really good question? In terms of our current budget, what is the budget anticipate that for the current year? If you're saying that the state's telling us that they'll get half of what?
Well, that was, we reduced state revenue, other state revenue down to $911,000 for this year, because as we're moving into this year, we were told to anticipate only two payments.
Right, two of the
only four. Two payments. We haven't received anything essentially through the first half of this year. So we'll wait and see exactly when we're going to receive those payments and when we'll recognize those revenues. And I'll be sure to include that in my board report as we move forward, so that the board has complete clarity on where we stand with state revenues. Because this is, as you can see, we're a total revenue, we received $954,000 more than what we had, than what we budgeted for. But of that, over $1 million of it's from the state.
Right.
So,
but I mean, for the current budget, have we budgeted to get half of what we
essentially were? That's what
okay.
we did.
So that's our number.
Yeah.
Which could put us in the same situation that we have this year.
Correct. If the state ponies up what they really owe us.
Right.
If they do that.
So that's what Bob's trying to illustrate, is the degree to which it's a certain degree of guessing game.
And it's unfortunate. I feel very uncomfortable in a position that I'm in, trying to make accurate presentations to the board when really what we hear from Springfield, there is no clarity. We simply cannot get a straight answer in terms of budgeting. And I talked to the auditors, and I says, guys, I am very uncomfortable with the way these revenue numbers came in. Can you tell me a little bit about how other districts are doing it? They said, Bob, to be honest with you, it's a non-issue in other districts. 50% of our clients budgeted just like you did, got substantially more than what they anticipated receiving, and were elated by it. And in 50%, came in under budget because they didn't bother to take any reductions into account. So it's a 50-50 split in terms of what other districts are doing.
You know, and I think we should also note that there's a compounding factor for us, which was intentional 3 years ago when we reduced our operating expenses by $3.2 million in anticipation of, a future that would continue to give us some significant issues. And we knew that by reducing at the time we did, it would allow us to gradually adjust and do the things we wanted to do without being making huge cuts over the next several years. So we've now made some real adjustments in our expenditures and realigned some of our efficiencies, which we're proud of. We think those are good things. But that's also lent this, you know, to us having a compounding effect of our fund balance.
But I'll tell you, Bob, I'm much happier that you took a very conservative approach and you made those adjustments, because if you hadn't, you'd be coming to us with a deficit. And, you know, I think we're in an enviable position now.
Mm-hmm.
So kudos to you for putting that all together.
Well, I think when you think about the long-range plan and some of the things we hope to accomplish over the next several years, there are expenditures that are potentially out there that we want to be able to handle, whether it's building a new school, which could add operating expenses that we wouldn't want to have to go to taxpayers to ask for support for, if we're adding programs that we, you know, think are important in terms of creating 21st century. Those could add some operating expenditures. So, I mean, we feel like we've positioned the district from an efficiency standpoint pretty well to manage
for the long
where
time.
We want to go, and having a little room to add when we need to add.
The accumulation of fund balances allows us that flexibility of being able to look at things long term in terms of improving the district education.
Just so for the non-financial guy, just so I understand it, if the state would pay what it owes on time, these issues would disappear.
They disappear. Mm-hmm. And if they would tell us, you know, up until 4 years ago, this never used to happen. We'd be able to use the budget right on the dime with regards to revenues, because they would say, expect a 2% increase to your general state aid and, 3% increase to your other categoricals. You can't do that any longer, because nobody's making a definitive comment. Budget this and you'll be good. Because ISB is telling us the budget one way, and then the legislature ultimately comes through with the money, and then we end up with a situation like this. Believe me, I'm not happy about the way this occurred. I'm glad it's a positive number versus a negative number. But the fact remains that I don't feel comfortable bringing a degree of uncertainty to the Finance Committee, to the Board.
And we want to budget and expend in a pretty close window. You know, that's certainly our goal every year on our scorecard.
So then the final number in regards to total revenue is the federal state aid. And we budgeted $949,000, and we ended up with $1,056,000 for $106,000 additional. We believe that is really just a timing issue between when the funds were received and when they were actually, a timing issue between when they were supposed to be received and when they were ultimately received. And it also has to do with the ERA funding, the final tail end of the ERA funding, when we received those dollars from, just like the Hadley project. We finished that project in August, but we were still receiving money all the way through the middle of this past fiscal year. So those numbers were accrued. We accounted for them in one manner, and they came in a little bit differently, a little bit greater than what we had anticipated.
Well, and our bilingual funding has been volatile from the state, or from the feds. We've received word that we're going to get X amount, and then we have twice now received additional funding. So we prepare a budget for that funding, and then we have to go back and amend it at the federal level to accommodate the additional funding that comes in.
And remember, we're putting these budget numbers together in May and June of one fiscal year. And that fiscal year starts July 1st. We're bringing it to the board for approval in mid to late August, when a lot of things still are yet being fleshed out and there's a certain degree of unknown. So I just as a heads up, I always find that pages 16, 17, which is an all fund reconciliation between what we received last year and what we received this year, And then also starting on page, I believe I mentioned, page 41, provides a reconciliation by fund, general fund, O&M, transportation, and so forth. And these numbers were pulled directly out of this comprehensive annual financial report. So I'll move on to the expenditure side. Salaries, we budgeted $26,271,000. We came in with $25,984,000. Again, there's a we underspent by $286,000. This is a result of really not having a final staffing plan in place until the fiscal year is in place and after the budget has been approved, and then we're moving forward with educational program changes throughout the year. So these numbers are kind of volatile. We try to cut down and minimize that over and under as great as we can.
And we hired late, some additional positions late in the summer, and we hired more first-year teachers this last year than we have done previously.
Which is a big difference because typically when we'll budget a teacher that may be in her retirement year of contract at, let's say, $100,000 a year versus a relatively new teacher who we might bring in as low as $41,000 or as much as $55,000. And they all have different structures with regards to their not only their compensation but their benefit packages. So we underspent in salaries by $286,000. We also underspent in benefits by $401,000. And this we recognized as we were moving into this year's budget. So before I presented the board, the finance committee and the board with the final budget for fiscal year 2012, I backed out almost $400,000 of the benefit line. So hopefully what the issue that we had this year will not roll forward.
It was our first full year with
EBC.
It was our first full year with EBC.
Yes, it was.
So I think we probably budgeted 8% and we came in at 4% something.
Yeah, 4.5, 4.9%.
Yeah.
You're right. We budgeted about 8-10% and it came in about 4.9. Something just under 5%.
Yeah.
So this is an area that we recognize we're having an issue with and we reduced that amount. Next item would be purchase services. We overspent this line item by $429,000, and I mentioned in a previous board or finance committee meeting, this is a result to some substantial increases in services tied to special education that we paid out at the year end. And these were paid out. See, just like revenues, something that is paid out, obviously, as of June 30th, but also paid out in July or August, if it applies to the year end of June 30th, the auditors come in and actually accrue that number back. So we received a substantially greater cost than we had anticipated for purchase services in the amount of $429,000.
Is that something we're going to see going forward, or do we know why?
I don't anticipate this kind of number showing up, being off by $429,000. But I expect that this area could be an area of continued unknown expense, not knowing our commitments. This is one of the single greatest. You know, we kind of have a handle on salaries. We know what they're going to go up annually. We know what benefits are going to go up annually. But purchase services, when they're tied to special education, it's a wild card. We don't know. We get a bill. We get a bill from Case. We get a bill from, you know, we deal with probably a half dozen different outplacement services for our kids. And services that we purchase, and we just get a bill for them. There's no what they do is they bill you for the cost of a program divided by the total kids in a program times the number of kids you have in that program. So it's really kind of an unknown. We're billed on a quarterly basis. We have a pre-bill, an ongoing bill, and then a final bill. And that final bill typically doesn't arrive until. You know, I think I just seen one come through for one of our organizations in November. So, I mean, there's a long follow-through, a flow-through on those expenditures. Supplies and materials, we over-budgeted by $352,000. This is an item that we'll continue to take a look at and try to thread back and see exactly where the issues were with regards to it. We're trying to back some money out of it. We tried to back some money out of there this year. Leave enough there so that we can cover our expenditures, but still not sure significant of a difference between what we anticipated our budget to be and what our actual accruals were or what our actual year-end expenditures were. Then finally, one of the other items, the last major item for presentation here is the capital outlay of $2,221,000, opposed to a year-end accrual of $1,390,000 for an underspend of $630,000. A couple of things come to mind here with regards to why we were so significantly under budget. When I take projects out to bid, when we take projects out to bid and I incorporate those numbers into our budget, it's the bulk budget number that that we budget. So to give you an example, last year we had two major projects that we went out to bid for. We had the Hadley project and we had the summer capital projects. I gave the reconciliation to the board probably last January and February. That alone accounted for over $200,000 of difference between budgeted and actual expenditures. So you have the differences in the allowances in terms of what the bids come back, and the bids are always structured with an allowance package in there so we don't exceed a certain spend on that. And so that's one of the single biggest items. And then finally, it's the timing of payments. We have projects that can occur, they can start as early as March and end as late as August, September, or October. And those follow through multiple fiscal years. So there's another play, there's another issue at play here in terms of the timeliness, in terms of when the contractor submits their final bills and when we finally pay them. Now, I will tell you, for this summer's capital projects, we still have not done a final reconciliation because we have a couple of outstanding issues, and I'm not comfortable releasing those funds to the contractor without being able to resolve all those issues. And this is typically, November, December is typically the time when we finalize those numbers, and like I said, I have previously given the board a reconciliation between budgeted amounts and what the actual expenditures occurred. So I would say that, you know, close to $600,000 of this amount is a direct result of the allowances that were built in to the budget, as well as the fact that we underspent the expenditures, as well as the timeliness of the contractors submitting revenue items or submitting requests for payment and when we actually pay the bill.
Bob, can you give me an example of one of those multi-year capital?
Yeah, with the Hadley project. We started that in March of 2010. We didn't finish it until September, October of 2011. So we budgeted part of the money during fiscal year 2010 and part of the money in fiscal year 2011. That is, although that project is now over a year old, it's still showing up in this financial statement. Because this is as of the year ended June 30th, 2011.
So we opened that classroom in August of 2011, or classroom, sorry, but the construction was still occurring over the summer of 2011. The bulk of it was occurring then, but we were expending between, as Bob said, September and June was another fiscal year. So you're budgeting in both years for
budgeting as well as receiving expense requests from the reimbursement request from the contractor, because if we started it, you can be sure that those guys pretty much bill every 30 days once they really get the project rolling. So if we start a project in March, you're probably going to find a payment May, June, and then you got July, August, September, and then it rolls into the end of the year when we do our reconciliation. We probably get our final payment made in December or January. So that's a good example of a capital project that can occur over multiple fiscal years. And I will tell you, even summer capital projects can occur over multiple years. As I stated, the projects that we're doing this year, that we did this past summer, we still haven't made final payout. And we're not going to until we're in complete agreement with the final work that was completed, as well as any outstanding issues that we may have between the contractor, the district, and the contractor.
So I guess I totally understand what you're saying. What that kind of leads me to believe is that we would see a shortfall for this year.
It depends upon how much the auditors actually accrued for this year's projects and how the next summer's project roll out too. I mean, you're right. What comes in one year should turn around in the previous on the following year.
That's just the way we budget capital expenditures, summer capital projects for the fiscal year, but in reality they tend to bridge over.
They bridge over multiple years. And as an example, the professional fees associated with summer projects, I've been working with FGM for capital project of FGM and Erickson Engineering for next summer's capital projects, and we're already getting pre-built on that work. So that's another item in purchase services that we would pay out of that particular expenditure account. So although we say, you know, July 1st to June 30th is a fiscal year, projects occur over multiple years. Finally, the other item down there, we budgeted for $4,493,000. We actually paid out $4,538,000, or we overspent by $44,000. Overall, so what I want to do now is I just briefly want to be able to tie numbers back for you. We received $954,000 in additional revenue than what we anticipated. Our expenditures came $1,198,000 under budget. If you take those two numbers, that's $2,152,000. That $2,152,000 is the difference between the fiscal year surplus of $3,360,000 and the anticipated surplus of $1,208,000. That's the difference of $2,152,000. So my point in this exercise this evening was to be able to present to you a rationale between what we budgeted for and what expenditures and revenues actually came in at for the previous fiscal year. Any questions? Well, you know, this is an ongoing conversation. I'll be happy to entertain any additional questions that you may have. Be happy to investigate any questions that you may ask. As I indicated earlier, auditors, Baker Tilly, will be out in early January. They'll be presenting you with the comprehensive annual financial report. These numbers, what you have here in front of you, is the final version. This is what's going to be ultimately presented to you. This is what's going to be published. This is what is sent to our various financial agencies that we do business with, bondholders and people that hold leaseholds and so forth. So that concludes the presentation on the CAPR. Anything else? We have a few minutes left to discuss, or should we break early and take up the board meeting at 7:30?
I don't have anything else. Dan or Eva, something specific.
Okay, hearing none.
Steve, do you have anything else for finance you wanted to talk about?
No, I don't.
Okay. Then hearing none, we'll close this evening's meeting. Thank you.